the key for us is we do have to be willing to change and really looking at those events and saying, what are you updating from year to year? And it doesn't mean everything, because that's overwhelming, right? Let's really dig in and say what worked and what did people respond really well to. And then let's hope that that's 80%.
Great events create great brands. But pulling off an event that engages, excites, and connects audiences, well, that takes a village. And we're that village. My name is Alyssa.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Felicia.
And you're listening to Great Events, the podcast for all event enthusiasts, creators, and innovators in the world of events and marketing.
What is going on in the wide, wide world of events? My name is Rachel, and I'm coming to you live from Great Events on the Road. Today, we are talking about what it actually takes to build events to grow organizations, develop professionals, and move the industry forward. And I have two of the best of the best from your favorite association, Meetings Professional International. I have Rachel Benedict and Lori Pugh. Rachel is the Chief Revenue Officer for MPI, and Lori is the Vice President of MPI Academy. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
So excited to be taking this podcast on the road. And it's just one of a series of many, many podcasts to come. So we're pumped to be here. But today, as we're talking about kind of driving growth of events and things like that, I mean, Rachel brings both her revenue and experience strategy as well as destination strategy lens. She's definitely seen how events create business value from both sides of the table. And Lori, you've also been in the industry for a while, so you know what it takes to bring education and experience design together. So you have a lot of knowledge on how you've shaped programs and things like that that make events worth attending. So together, I feel like you are going to give us a great picture of all the things that people need to pay attention to when they're doing their events. So tell everyone listening why you got into the events industry and a little bit of your background, like the 30 second elevator pitch of you. I'll start with you, Rachel.
All right. I joined MPI 3 years ago after spending 25 years at Visit Denver. So as you mentioned, kind of that destination side and now on the professional association side. I, unlike a lot of the people I see today, which is so exciting, I did not study this industry.
Yeah.
So I got my undergrad from Michigan State, which actually has an amazing hotel and hospitality
like
program.
Yeah.
And I studied psychology, got a master's in psychology, and then started working at a hotel in Denver and fell in love with the people.
Yeah.
And that's really where it started for me. And it where my heart continues to be is the people that are a part of this industry, I think is what really, really sets it apart. So that's what keeps me excited and makes me just want to continue to pour into it.
And you've been with MPI how long?
I just celebrated 3 years.
3 years.
I try to Woo-hoo. Still say I'm new, but the team doesn't really let me. But I think it's all relative.
When do you stop being new? Like one and a half years? Yeah.
I think it's relative based on where you were before and for how long.
This is also, is it dog years or is
yeah,
it like?
Totally. Yeah, fair.
Lori, what about you?
Yeah, so I've been in the industry, I think 22 years now, and I worked at an ad agency. It's how I got into business. And we had lots of clients that had preview events and product events. And a lot of our clients, though, were home builders. And when the crash happened in 2007-ish, I decided to pivot to events full time and fell in love with it. And time has flown.
Yeah, you kind of get like your heart sunk into the industry and then you're like, there's no other place. Nope. This is my home.
It's in your blood.
Love. Yeah. All right. Well, we are on the Great Events podcast and we are actually on site at WEC at their program. So Rachel's right, which they love us. So I'm so happy that you all took the time to do this. This is kind of a big topic right now because of everything coming out with AI and people are always debating the value of events, right? What separates some of these events from being a nice to have event versus an event that clearly drives business? Because, you know, events as a channel is a big business driver. So why is that so important?
It's a great question. And I think there is such a juxtaposition right now with the importance of AI, which we know is a divisive topic, right? There's a very much a love-hate happening there. And then the power of in-person events. But I think, and I know you're passionate about this too, so much of what drives great events is the data.
Yeah.
And it's the information around the event as well. And it's how people are what is their measure of success? And I think we really have to drill down to each segment. We have personas of people that are attending our events, right?
Right.
We have people that are coming for the education. We have people that are coming for the networking. We have people that are coming because they want actual business leads, right? But those measures of success are different, I think, for each segment. So digging in and understanding how that success is being measured, and then how you as an organization are going to deliver on it, and then partnering with your right. host city on their measurements for success too, to make sure that you're driving business from their perspective as well. So I think it's a better understanding of all the different types of attendees that we have showing up at these events.
Yeah, that's for sure. And Lori, I feel like this is the main reason people come to events, like from the education and experience side. What do you think separates an event that kind of simply delivers programming versus one that creates like lasting value and community for attendees?
I've really seen a trend change from the, hey, we went, you know, hard-hitting 20-minute sessions and on to the next one. It's more about what is the concept you just heard, and then how can you talk about it with a community of people who actually understand right. what you're going through. So it's all about the peer-to-peer component. And so oftentimes we just, man, we slam in as much content, but no time to digest it, to talk about it, to apply it. So I think that's what's really important in the design factor and what live events, because you can get content anywhere, even this podcast, right. but what you can't get is the relationship with the person next to you that you're talking to it about.
I feel like MPI does that well. You all take your attendee feedback very seriously. One of the follow-up questions for you, Lori, is kind of what has changed most with attendee expectations? And I don't know if it's changed or maybe the trends have gotten, you know, more vocal, but what do you think?
They've always wanted actionable insights, but I do say now with technology and what we can do, there's opportunities for them to get beyond just taking it in. They want to know, okay, what is the next step? What am I actually going to be able to totally. Do with this? Mm-hmm. And man, we were talking about, I think it's back 2012, I remember thinking, oh, how great it would be able to personalize education if we had the right technology.
Yeah.
And we're here.
We're
and,
here. Yeah.
yeah. And so they're expecting it to meet those expectations. And now we can finally do that.
Yeah. That's a great answer. Yeah. I feel like the one thing that we see at our events is more networking. Please, I want to meet people like me. And that's where you go. You go to events to find a community and those actionable insights. Mm-hmm. But I feel like for a while there that you were right. Like people were like, let's not do hour-long sessions. Let's do 20-minute sessions. Mm-hmm. And you go to these sessions, it'd be rapid fire, and then there was no time to, like, actually ask questions. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, for my brain, I can't digest information unless I'm, like, interacting with people yeah. or asking questions. I don't know. I don't think that's just me. I think that's most people.
100% agree. Yeah. You know, it's one of those things I give an example of it is we want to see all the healthy food items on a buffet, but we also want the donuts. So we say we want all the healthy stuff, but we eat the donuts. We yes. say we want fast-hitting education and we want 20-minute sessions, but then we get mad when we don't have time to process it or reflect. So you have to have a balance.
Oh my God. We order these big platters of crudité and like a platter of chicken tenders. And what do you think goes first?
Yeah,
exactly.
Those chicken tenders.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. And I really hope you have ranch for them too.
I know. Like, yeah. I know that sounds horrible, but like sometimes they bring these beautiful displays out and it ends up being such a waste. I'm like, I would love to be the girl that eats the entire crudité yeah. tray. And maybe I yeah. will be one day. But
I think, you know, it's funny and it's a very funny example, but I think it really highlights something that's super important, which is one of the challenges I think we all have as event professionals is how well do we know our audiences?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they're changing so much. There was a time when whether it's WEC or whatever the industry show is, there was just an assumption like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go to that. And now those decisions are being really, they're being looked at and you really have to make that case.
Right.
So it's not as easy as it used to be to get people to show up. Right.
right.
And then to really understand what are they looking for, because it might be the platter of donuts or the chicken tenders, right? And if we keep, you know, missing that mark, there's, right. you know, what people say they want and then what behavior shows up. Yeah. And then how do we communicate that?
Gotta have my emotional support chicken tenders.
Yeah.
Well, actually, that's a great segue into like moving the case for event value into how leaders actually build that. Well, at least for me, and maybe because I'm in the events industry, so I know events is a channel drive business, but what's actually working? So I'm going to ask Lori, you started to touch on some of this, but Lori, when you're shaping content or education for an event, how do you move from an audience, you know, that their needs from the an agenda, speaker mix, experience design, like what of those aspects kind of truly lands? Does it differ every year? Is it like completely different every single time?
Yeah, you know, we have community groups and I've really been relying on them much more than I used to. Just for context for the audience, I was with MPI for 7 years, left for four, have been back for a year. And I think what's really important is we have our listening ear to the people, because a lot of times as planners, we think we know what everyone wants and we don't pause to go back and ask them. And so for me, vetting ideas with those groups has been super important. I'll even say it's really hard because there's so many topics so many people want, and I'm known to over content develop. And sometimes it's not necessarily even about the content. It's the sessions that are broad enough that people come with what they want to learn. Mm. And then we develop the session there on site with them. Like, okay, here, bring your challenges. What's going on for different sectors? And people just want to be heard.
Right.
And sometimes those sessions go off better than the ones where we've programmed them a year out. I mean, the whole world changes in a year. And it's really hard. You know, so sometimes I'll have session spots that I don't source until 60 days out for those types of topics that change. When it comes to speakers, though, we do a call for speakers. But honestly, it's all about I want to hear from people who are planning conferences every day, even my suppliers, because I feel like they go to a lot more conferences. What worked for them? So as I get older and more experienced, it's less about what I think and listening to other people.
Right. Yeah. Always listen, because you could design an amazing conference that you would want to go to, but it might not be like your audience.
Right.
Right. I was talking to Ken from Freeman, who does all the insights. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know, he was telling me in their recent study, I think by 2030, most of like the later generations will be out of the industry, and it'll be mostly Gen Z and millennials. And like some of the Gen Z folks don't want certain things, and we need to be listening to them, because mm-hmm. they could just up and not come to our conference mm-hmm. and then ruin mm-hmm. our entire revenue strategy, right? Because it could make or break some businesses that rely on events completely for, you know, driving revenue, driving membership, whatever that might be. And so it's big, no pressure.
Right?
No pressure.
Well, it makes sense, Rachel, that you're so good at this, because it's psychology. It really is.
You use that degree every day.
Yes.
You use that degree
every
day. I
hate to use the KPI word, but what KPIs are you tracking for like attendee experience content, Lori?
That one is hard. I'm trying to... Surveys only get you so far. So what I am trying to leverage in really making sure I put it as my own personal KPI is, how do I follow up with the people that attended afterwards to get them thinking about the content they experienced? Because I've been to a ton of conferences where, oh, that was great, but I can't, you know, I jotted down notes and then I lost my notebook and I don't remember what I was going to do after. So for me, that's a big success factor. Of course, you want to drive revenue. I'm sitting mm-hmm. next to the mm-hmm. CRO. So that's, you got to say, which is important.
That's where I'm going next for sure.
Okay. But if it's relevant for them and it's part of a year-long strategy, they're more likely to renew their membership. They're more likely to think that we cared if we followed up after. And how do we take what sessions were super successful and maybe do a virtual summit on it? So really, it's the year-long strategy coming out of this.
Yeah. Well, follow up to that, Rachel, because I feel like, how should teams align their event goals with revenue strategy, you know, event growth, things like that?
Certainly.
And membership too, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Coming from the revenue side of it, it's interesting because we have these conversations internally. And what I love about our team is I'm grateful because we're very aligned. But the comment I make a lot of times is, every single person on our entire team needs to think about things through a revenue lens.
Right.
Because it is the ultimate, truly measure of success. Because if you're delivering, they will renew their memberships. They will join as new members. If you're delivering, the supplier partners are going to come back and you will get new ones. If you're delivering, the meeting event professionals that are showing up are going to look at this when they look at their calendar and say, oh my gosh, well, I certainly can't miss WEC, or I can't miss, you know, our European event, whatever it is.
Right.
So revenue shows up as that real ultimate measure of success. And I think some teams, that's a little bit more divided, where we all really come together and say, okay, how do we grow every segment?
Totally, yeah.
And how do we do it in a way where Because the other side of it is that you certainly don't want the experience for your attendees, no matter what category they fall in, to feel like revenue's the holy grail, right?
You so don't want it to be like so sales heavy
right,
that it's
that's
like,
exactly right.
I'm just being attacked
all
the time.
exactly. Yeah. So it's really working with the teams to find that balance, but knowing that if you're really executing on great events, and we are, then it shows up.
Right.
It shows up, and it's that very tangible result of really hitting those KPIs and giving your audiences what they're looking for.
What do you think event leaders, like maybe outside people that are members, maybe just even from your destination background, what do you think event leaders often miss from those opportunities? Because I feel like we do so much work as planners, mm-hmm. and then we get to like the Super Bowl and we fumble the ball in some cases. Like, what do you think like event leaders sometimes miss out opportunity-wise?
Coming from that destination side, what we used to always say was there's one main area where our goals really, really intersect with one another, and it is the destination wants more people and the organization wants more people. That's somewhere where they really can intersect in working closely with the destination. And again, it is a partnership. So regardless, like we're a show where we rely heavily on destination support. But even if you're not, they are vested in your success. So it's really sitting down and it's having those conversations that start a year or two out to utilize all those tools in your tool belt. Like, why would you not, you know, if you have a great local expert, like engage them and have those conversations. And I think from the destination side, when I look at all these amazing meetings that are happening in these business events, I think some of it does come down to that really knowing the attendee. There's so many conversations where it's, we need this much for Wi-Fi, or our people are going to drink coffee all day long and they're going to, you know, and then what really happens is something that's different. And really the destination's job is to give that information.
Yeah.
You should request or expect a really thorough post-convention report. I want to know exactly like how many concurrent users did I really have? Did people drink coffee all day long?
Right.
Did they, you know, what did that really look like in practice? And then taking that in and saying, how do we adjust for next year? And then communicating those adjustments. Because I know we're trying to tell people when we're trying something. Mm-hmm. You know, Lori had a great, great idea for our European conference. And we had one of our general session speakers and the audience got to vote on the topic that the general session speaker was going talk about. And it was real time.
Right.
And it was fascinating because he had two topics and I was thinking, oh, I really want like the second one. And I thought for sure this room's going to go with the first one. They didn't. It was fascinating. They went with
Whoa.
The second one. But then we had the opportunity where we were able to talk on, he was able to talk on stage and say, hey, if you really wanted to hear that first one, I'm doing a breakout later this afternoon.
Oh, okay.
But
Smart.
It was, so in communicating that and saying, hey, we're gonna try something new here.
Choose your own adventure,
yeah,
man.
Choose your
I like
own adventure,
it.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a great idea.
That's really cool. I've always wanted to do choose your own adventure, but I like have too much anxiety about not knowing because I'm such a planner.
Yeah. Well, it's the type A part of us. Like, is he going to have his presentation up? Is it going to be the right one? But man,
is there like a blink twice for this one? Is there like signals?
Exactly.
Sometimes you just have to roll with it. And you know, that's what makes us, I think, special people as planners, because we have to use our left brain and the right brain. We have to be analytical, but we also have to be creative to be successful.
Totally. How do you think planners can continue to grow their conference? Obviously, working with the destination is one element of that. Like, I feel like I'm always looking for new ideas of how do we grow? And maybe that's not the answer either. Maybe the answer is like quality over quantity, because that's a big conversation right now with our industry, too.
You're right. It's two things. I think one, from a vast numbers, a quantity perspective, especially in what we do, there's so many different sectors and there's so many people who would do events that they don't even know that there's an industry out there. So I think that there's ways that you can bring in different verticals to grow. But we're seeing it in travel right now with super luxury travel. Mm-hmm. And then that is growing. People who have money are willing to spend a lot for special experiences. So when it comes to quality, you know, how do you take it to the next level and find that audience that wants to come together with a small group where it's intimate, where it's invite only? So it's playing with those two sides to see how you can grow your business either with numbers or the financial side.
Right. That's smart.
But you're asking the right question, which is, again, it comes back to like, what are those measures of success? Is more better? In some cases, the answer might be yes. Like, we want more people and here's why. In other cases, it might be less people, but higher spend.
The right people.
Right?
Yeah.
The right people. Because there is a challenge, I think, every year when we do WEC, because there's a little part of us that does try to like be everything to everyone, right? Like we're trying to make sure we have education for people that are new to the industry. We're trying to have education for mid-level. We're trying to have education that speaks to suppliers as well. We're trying to have senior level. So sometimes it might be experimenting with, okay, maybe we lean in a little more to this type of education for this year and we market it that way, right? Or it's looking and saying, what ultimately will help us get to that North Star and what does that North Star look like? And that, I think, changes. We used to have like 5-year plans. I don't know that 5-year plans are the most effective thing right now. Right? No. It feels like a 5-month plan. It's like, what are we going to be doing in 5 months?
It's flying by the seat of your pants. Yeah. Planners love it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Everything's changing so quickly in real time. It's crazy.
Yes.
Which actually, you keep giving me some great segues. We're talking next about predictions and looks ahead, what's next, all that fun stuff, because everybody wants to know what's next, even if you don't know the next 5 years. What are some things, I'll start with you, Lori, for event leaders, maybe just a piece of advice or something that planners or event leaders, keep saying planners, we got to broaden our horizons here beyond just planners. But what do you think event leaders need to either start or stop doing in the next, let's call it 5 to 6 months?
Yeah.
Or a year.
Managing teams, how to be a leader. We a lot of times know how to do our BEOs, to operate, but how do we start moving ourselves into the role of developing people who are coming in and finding their strong suits? Because with AI, if you have a skill of managing people, that's going to get you up the ladder a lot quicker than how well do you organize an event. So that's one of the things. I would also say we have to communicate our value as an industry better. I think that is something we're really working hard to do. If I say, for instance, I'm a project manager, people know what that is. But if I say, you know, I'm a meeting manager, meeting and events manager, nobody knows what that is. So the point in saying that is everyone in our industry has to be able to talk in a similar language to get our industry or ourselves to advance to the next level. So I would say that's a big one. And then, of course, AI. I mean, that's the next everything. It's the now. It's not the next.
Yeah, it's happening in real time. That's interesting that you say it like that. I feel like every day I come in, I'm like, okay, how do I rationalize? We work at events companies, too. Right. Like, even us in the events industry still have to, like, rationalize what we do every day. Mm-hmm. And you're right, like, the language is so different depending on what vertical you're in, what persona you are. And we can't all get it together, which is why people come to MPI. They're like, help me figure out how to speak the right language. And everyone, you know, for a long time, I started hating the phrase, like, take your seat at the boardroom table. Mm-hmm. But it's still true. It's still like we're asking for a lot of money and we have to be able to provide value and growth and all those KPIs and things like that on top of planning a flawless execution. It's almost like an impossible task, it feels like.
Yeah, it is.
It's a lot.
It is.
I'm not overwhelmed or anything.
No, You just have that event coming up in July.
Everything's fine.
It's totally fine.
I know.
It's totally fine.
Rachel, same question to you. What do you think the industry will need to change over the next 12 months if it wants to unlock a new level of growth or evolve?
I think the key word for me in that question is change. Mm-hmm. And I think our industry has been really slow to change. And there's things that we've talked about. I mean, all of us, you know, sustainability, for an example, right? We've talked about that for so many years, but there's still so much more opportunity just in that area, right? And you look at even what the Europeans are doing. They're light years ahead of us, right?
Right.
So I think that the key for us is we do have to be willing to change and really looking at those events and saying, what are you updating from year to year? And it doesn't mean everything because that's overwhelming, right? Like, and I think that can be confusing to the attendees and the audience you're trying to pull in. So it's not like, let's reinvent the wheel every single year, but let's really dig in and say what worked and what did people respond really well to. And then let's hope that that's 80%. And then every year looking at that 20% and saying, what are we going to do different? And then, like I said, the key is communicating it, because I think sometimes you do something different, but then you don't tell anyone you did. Mm-hmm, and right. They might not notice. Like, we told people, it was a couple of years ago, we tried like a totally different type of lunch and they hated it. Okay, great. But we told them, we were like, we're going to try something new. Let's give
At
us your
you
feedback. And they were like, hated it. And we were like, noted, got it.
Won't but, try it again, but we try it so that you don't have
yes,
to.
Yes, exactly. So it's like being willing to do that. But like I said,
the
key
the all
is.
Was vegan lunch or something?
It was, yeah, we tried it and it didn't go over well, which then there's learnings from that, right? It's like, if you take that, it's, I think it's Adam Grant. Like, if you take that scientist approach, like actually a scientist actually gets really excited when their hypothesis does not come true. They're like,
right.
Ooh,
I
thought
it was, out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like I thought it was this, but it's not. So if we can take that mentality and say, I'm totally willing to try this and I'm going to tell you about it. And then if you hate it, I'm actually going to listen to you as well. I'm not going to keep showing up
right.
in that way.
Because you were transparent and straightforward
yes.
with it.
Yes. So I think
so
that,
funny.
I think that change element is key. And I think that there is an upside to AI, because what AI is doing a little bit for all of us is it's making us quite like every email, every ad, every we're curious, like, is that real? Did AI write that? Did AI? But when you're doing this, like everyone can attest, there's no AI help here. Like we are, you know, this is
humans,
it's authenticity, right? And that authenticity, I think, is going to be craved even more
100%.
As organizations continue to bring AI into their day to day. And authenticity is exactly what happens when you're live in person, face to face.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We have great job security with live events, I think.
That's right.
Yes. For sure.
Yes.
I think one thing though on the AI side is like going back to growth and data and events as a revenue channel, mm-hmm. like AI can help you with those business cases
yes.
and like help you do all the, sorry, but boring back end
yes.
stuff that would take you 40 hours might take AI an hour if you have the right data. Like if you have bad data, you're not really going to get anything great out of it, but that could help with your growth as well.
I think that's the potential. Lori's AI is Donna, and she's very, we love Donna.
Donna.
She's very smart.
Is
but
Donna
if
your
someone,
agent's name? Or?
No,
her.
I just name it, and I'll say, oh, I'm going to get Donna on that. Don't worry. She's going to have that in at 3. Like, I legitimately name her and bring her into the fold.
But there's a lot of excitement around that. If you position it this way, like, okay, dear team members, what if I could tell you that you're going to have assistance with your tactical, administrative, day-to-day things, and every single person is going to be able to be more strategic?
Right.
Like, that's pretty exciting,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
exciting.
I hate doing it. Administrative
right.
work.
Oh, sorry.
I love it. I want to do a quick lightning round. So if someone watching or listening does one thing in the next week or for their next event to make their event more valuable to their attendees, sponsors, et cetera, their business, what should it be?
My answer is going to be a little strange.
Okay.
And I actually learned it from a coworker, is pause. Yeah. We're moving so fast that I think we don't stop and say, let's look at the registration experience. How can we make this a little bit better? Let's go to the airport arrival. Mm-hmm. How can we make it a little bit better? Just pausing for a second and just looking at the things that don't even cost us money.
Right.
You know, how do we just stop doing logistics and think about how can we be the magician for a second for each of those steps? So that's mine.
That's a really
that
good one.
Good.
I'm going to like put that on a post-it note at my desk because sometimes I'm just good. Going through the checklist so fast. What do you think, Rachel?
That, well, she took mine. No, I'm just
kidding. Same brain.
Just kidding. It's interesting because the first like word that came into my head was listen.
Yeah.
So I think it's a similar type of message, but perhaps around ask questions and then listen. So I think that looking at those surveys a little differently, like Lori mentioned, we've done some focus groups after one of our shows and digging in a little bit more and then figuring out the right questions to ask and then listening. And then that being the thread that you weave through everything. So again, it's this like full circle of communication.
Right.
So it's the communication back of that. Like we asked, this is what you told us. This is how we're going to pivot. This is what we're going to do differently.
Right. It's all for like, you're doing it all for what, right? You have
right.
to drive,
right.
the, like just to put like a fine tooth comb on this, like just when you're looking at your events, pause, listen. I love
mm-hmm.
that. But also like you're talking every day about your event. You're the one that knows it the best, but sometimes you need to pause and talk about the growth, talk about the experience, and then is your event design intentional? Yeah. That was the whole purpose of this podcast. It's like, how do you do that?
Yeah.
So thank you, ladies, so much for your wisdom here and doing it while you're on site in an event is very impressive. So I just one final shameless plug for MPI. Rachel, let's start with you. Where can listeners go to learn more about you, MPI, all the things?
They can go to lots of places, but MPI.org is our website. So that's really that first experience that people are going to get. We're also going to show up on LinkedIn, all the socials, Instagram. Lori's going to plug this, but the Academy is retooling. We have a brand new learning management system, a new LMS, and it is really going to change how we get to interact with our community around education. So I'll let you.
Question to you, Lori.
I'm so excited about the new LMS. So there's lots of platforms out there, but what's different about this is the way it brings the community together and spotlights the community as the content creator. So I want people to step out of their comfort zones because there's so much wisdom in our community. And why aren't people out there saying, hey, I'm an expert in XYZ. How can I contribute to the industry? So you'll see more and more coming out about that, but MPI.org and then learning, you'll see that on there. And I'm on LinkedIn. I'm always available for a coffee chat and new ideas.
Nice. Okay. Well, thank you. And I know everybody's always looking for more information. And you all have so many new things coming out every week, really. And so I'm sure after WEC is all said and done, you'll have a little bit more time to do that. But thank you so much for joining Great Events Podcast. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. It's been great.
Yeah. And thanks to our listeners for joining. You'll see us on the next one. Thanks so much.
Thanks for hanging out with us on Great Events, a podcast by Cvent. If you've been enjoying our podcast, make sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode.
And you can help fellow event professionals and marketers just like you discover great events by leaving us a rating on Apple, Spotify, or your preferred podcast platform.
Stay connected with us on social media for behind-the-scenes content, updates, and some extra doses of inspiration.
Got a great story or an event to share? We want to hear from you. Find us on LinkedIn, send us a DM, or drop us a note at greatevents@cvent.com.
Big thanks to our amazing listeners, our guest speakers, and the incredible team behind the scenes. Remember, every great event begins with great people.
And that's a wrap. Keep creating, keep innovating, and keep joining us as we redefine how to make events great.